This is a casual and unscripted conversation with Econoday economists Ann Picker, Jeremy Hawkins, and Mark Pender, who share their economic perspective for the day and for the week to come. Let's listen in.
So many things have been happening in the global economy, it's very hard to decide exactly where to start. But I think today we might start with China's eagerly awaited data that did not quite match expectations, but at the same time wasn't as bad as some feared. Just talking about just released fourth quarter GDP, industrial output, and retail sales for December. All three missed expectations, but none were terrible. GDP was up 6.8% from a year ago, missing the 6.9% consensus. For the year 2015, it was up 6.9% and basically met the government's goal of about 7% growth. But at the same time, this was the slowest growth since 1990. On a seasonally adjusted basis, GDP was up 1.6% on the quarter, down from 1.8% in the third quarter. Doubts have been raised about the reliability of Chinese economic data, though with many economists suggesting growth has been slower. Fears over slowing momentum in China and Beijing's handling of the economy have combined with concerns over plunging oil and commodity prices to pull down global stock markets since the start of 2016. Most agree, however, that China's maximum potential growth is slowing as an aging population shrinks the labor force and catch-up growth achieved by shifting labor from agricultural to the modern urban economy has been exhausted. Most importantly, Tuesday's data suggested that no material gain in what most economists have been telling the world for years. China's economy is cooling gradually from the sizzling double-digit growth to a more sustainable pace in the mid-single digits with no sign yet of a hard landing, which is what investors were fearing. As a result of these data, the stock markets have rebounded from their dismal performance, at least from yesterday, and are all up this morning. Growth has slowed for just about every quarter since the first quarter of 2010. So this is not a new phenomenon that growth is gradually slowing. Again, panic took over in the markets. In its update to its semi-annual IMF forecasts, the IMF left its estimate for China's growth for 2016 unchanged at 6.3%, even though it lowered global growth potential. Jeremy, what's new from Europe?
Okay, from my side of the water, I suppose really it's the big issue remains one of trying to find some inflation everywhere, at least in the context of all these central banks who are charged with meeting an explicit or at least near explicit inflation target. And with that in mind, it's going to make the ECB meeting this Thursday all the more important. As people may recall, we saw a 10 basis point cut in the deposit rate from the ECB at their last meeting in December. That was something of a disappointment for financial markets at the time, but the minutes of that meeting released last week have really given financial operators hope that we could see rates coming down again. In particular, those minutes suggested that there were calls for a significantly larger reduction in the deposit rate favoured by some, and the only real reason that didn't go through was that that they wanted to keep some of their powder dry for perhaps reducing rates further out. That doesn't mean to say that we'll be seeing any kind of easing initiatives coming out this Thursday. I must say I'll be very surprised if we were to see that. But at least it gives the financial markets something to hang on to. And there will be continued speculation about the possibility of a looser monetary stance from the ECB as we go forward during the course of 2016. And indeed, of note, just returning to this inflation aspect, we had confirmation of inflation in the Eurozone at an annual rate of just 0.2% for the back end of last year. That was released this morning, which was no surprise. But around that, there's increasing talk coming out of Europe now about at least the possibility that the central bank may be forced to cut its inflation target from its current near 2% rate to perhaps 1% over the course of the next year or so, simply because the outlook for prices is so soft over here. That would be a big blow to the ECB's credibility, I think, if they had to do that. So it means, to me, it seems to be pretty unlikely, but nonetheless, it's something that more longer-term investors should be aware of. Elsewhere here, I suppose the focus has been very much upon the pound, which has had a pretty awful start as far as 2016 is concerned. And that's a reflection of an ongoing downgrading of Bank of England interest rate expectations, together with the latest polls we've had on his so-called Brexit, the possibility that the UK will leave the European Union once this referendum has been held. And that, of course, has been promised by the back end of 2017. There was a poll out yesterday which suggested that those in favour of actually pulling out of the EU had moved up to as much as 47% against 38% wanting to stay in. That's a bit of an outlier as far as the polls are concerned at the moment, but nonetheless, it's just adding to concerns that the pound may not be part of the European Union, at least I should say the UK won't be part of the European Union once we get much beyond 2017. That's being compounded by, as I mentioned, ongoing downgrading to interest rate hike expectations, and that makes the pound look extremely vulnerable, particularly given the problems we have with a large current account deficit which needs funding over here. Otherwise, I suppose the main point from sort of my focus is Canada. We have the Bank of Canada meeting tomorrow. There's a really split market about the possibility of an interest rate cut there. We've seen the Canadian economy really failing to recover from the knock-on effects of weak energy prices as rapidly as the central bank was anticipating. We've also had the central bank apparently giving the nod to the big depreciation we've had coming through in its local currency. So that doesn't seem to be an issue as far as it's concerned. So it seems that either they'll come out and introduce another 25 basis point cut in interest rates tomorrow, or if they don't, they're going to come out with a sufficiently dovish message that people will be looking for the cut at the next meeting. And however you put that together, it really suggests that this Canadian dollar could fall significantly further unless we start to see some kind of bounce coming through in the energy market. Okay, that's me.
This is Mark Pender for the USA. Let me just ask you, Jeremy, real quick, on what was the core rate? I saw it was 0.9 for the...
Yeah, depending on which one you want to look at, but they use three core rates. They're currently running at between 0.8 and 0.9%.
And this is in Europe. This is Europe, and it's going up, though, right? Is it ticking higher?
Not really. Essentially, it's been flat for the last several months.
And your comment that they would explicitly change their inflation goal from 2% to 1%, they'd actually state that?
If they were to do it, they would do. But this is just talk in some of the European markets, which has been coming out, some of the large investment banks of late. In practice, I think it's extremely unlikely. If they were to do it, it'd be a long way in the future. But nonetheless, it just goes to show how investors are starting to look at the inflation picture. Inflation in the Eurozone has been, essentially below the 2% mark for a matter of years. Mm-hmm. And people are simply taking a view that it's never going to get back to 2% again. So it's target has to be revised.
Well, Janet Yellen theoretically argues the 2% is a historical rate. So you'd have to, realign yourself with how history has been assessed. I assume that the same issue would be for the ECB too. I mean, how do they justify the 2%?
Well, they never actually came out fully and justified explicitly where the 2% came from. But ostensibly, it's kind of where you're coming from, in the sense that, you know, over a longer period of time, that was the kind of rate they deemed to be, you know, as they describe, price stability, which is consistent with, you know, the Eurozone economy reaching its maximum potential. So for them, that's the rate they should be targeting in the first place. The real question now, I suppose, is whether or not potential growth rates, not just in Europe, but in the US and anywhere else for that matter, have actually, you know, been moved lower as a result of a last recession or whatever else has caused it.
Well, you know, for us, the Chinese GDP, even though it has been in a long trend downward, is kind of it could be portending what could transpire over here, which is lower than expected economic growth, which really wasn't expected to be very strong in the first place. Last week, we had retail sales at the core rate were dead flat, and this was the first, I think, December since 2009 where you had no improvement in this reading, which is a real negative for the holiday shopping season. And then you had a small contraction again in the manufacturing output of the industrial production report, as well as deep negatives in import and export prices. We have the CPI coming out tomorrow, and that has been showing more pressure than any of the other readings, but still not a great deal. And I think we're getting movement back in expectations for what the Federal Reserve is going to do. The expectations, Stanley Fisher, the vice chairman, was just telling us the week before last that we should build in more expectations for rate hikes. But that's not what's happening right now. It's going in reverse. And now people are talking about, forget about the March FOMC. Maybe it'll be the next one in April. And what we can expect, I think, in January FOMC will be very interesting in how they change the statement. China has to be reintroduced and given a lot of weight. And they're almost, it makes sense for their expectations for oil to hit a bottom. But if you're in the oil industry, sometimes, you know, people go broke before there is a bottom. So you never know really where the bottom is. And that'll be interesting to see how they weigh on commodity prices. But, it's more of all for us, for the U.S. It's, it's slowing growth. We're getting all this deflationary trends. We have a Federal Reserve now that's committed to withdrawing stimulus. And whether or not they can hold on to that will be very interesting. And they could be very, the pressure could really build if Europe, if bankers in Europe, the central bankers there, change their fundamental policy or their policy goals. That could definitely have a spillover. So very uncertain here from the U.S. Even though it was just a tiny, a quarter basis point rise in the funds rate last month, if you look at the stock market since that, and that's how, history is judged, it was a big reaction. And everyone spent so much time saying there should be no reactions, there should be little reaction. This was so well telegraphed.
Mark, may I interrupt you?
Sure, please.
The reaction in the stock market has been global and not necessarily to the Fed's. The immediate reaction to the Fed was rather benign. The reaction we're having now was to global issues, namely the price of oil, the fixation with China's growth and the like.
That's right. I know. But when you track these things, you want to track just two factors, and that's rate and what the stock market does. It's going to have an ugly look.
That could be,
and it's going. It should raise a note of caution among the Fed, or it may raise a note of caution. Certainly, that despite their efforts to say for a long time that this is, they telegraphed this so far in advance, 6 months in advance. I don't know, and they kept telling us diminishing how important it really is and how accommodative the policy still remains, but. If the Fed is going one way and the rest of the world is going another way, it's good.
It's
for
not the first
dollar.
Time.
It has to be good for the dollar.
It's not the first time.
Hey, Jeremy, would you buy the dollar here?
I'm not sure if I would. I mean, I've been negative on the euro for a long time, but I think, it's never easy calling the foreign exchange markets, obviously, but it's we've been in a pattern now within which people have been generally happy that it's just a matter of time before Fed interest rates go up, on the one hand. And on the other hand, you've got the Eurozone, where at best rates are staying where they are, or they're going to go down again. Given the implications for interest rate differential, you'd expect the dollar should rise. But I think now we've seen those currencies which have been underpinned on interest rate expectations looking that much more vulnerable. Because we start to see those interest rate hikes being pushed further out, then all of a sudden the reasons, or at least one of the reasons for buying the currency, is no longer there anymore. That may not be such an issue for the dollar, but it's certainly become very apparent for the pound, because, you know, we go back a few months ago, we had Mark Carney at the Bank of England suggesting that rates would probably be going up round about now. And just from what he was saying today, that's clearly no longer an issue. Indeed, rates may still be at current levels even at the end of the year, given the way the UK economy is performing at the moment. But I think the thing which complicates the pictures, even if those countries you thought may going to be put up rates aren't going to now, there's this ongoing move towards risk aversion, which means the likes of a dollar becomes an automatic safe haven currency, could give some problems for the likes of a Swiss franc as well, and presumably the yen should come out of this too. So I think it's, you know, it's interest rates versus risk aversion and safe haven flows at the moment.
This roundtable was brought to you by Econoday, the leader in supplying economic information to the world's top financial firms. You can find out more at www.econoday.com.